Hello and welcome to the next edition of our Basic Policy Debate instructional series, this being step number 7. My name is Alfred C. Snyder. I'm the Edwin W. Lawrence Professor of Forensics at the University of Vermont. And with me again today is University of Vermont debate coach Andy Ellis. Good to have you here, Andy.
Good to be here.
You're becoming a regular.
I am.
And today in step number 7, we're going to talk about disadvantages. They are one of the most important arguments in the debate. They're what the negative needs to win in order to win the debate, and they're what the affirmative needs to defeat in order to win the debate. So a brief look at the world of disadvantages and how they can help make you a winner in today's step number 7. A disadvantage is an argument made by the negative. Oh, it can be made by the affirmative against the negative counterplan or whatever, but for the most part, we talk about it being a negative argument. Let's start with the basic definition of what a disadvantage is. A disadvantage is an argument that states that if we adopted the plan of the other team, the policy of the other team, something bad would result. For example, you could say that if we adopted the plan of dropping out of high school and not getting your high school degree, that something bad would result. You probably wouldn't be able to get as good a job as you would if you had a high school degree. So that's the basic idea of what a disadvantage is. If the plan is adopted, then something bad will happen. You see then why this is an argument for the negative. Because the negative is saying, no, it's not just good things that happen because of the affirmative plan. As a matter of fact, bad things can happen. Now, in understanding disadvantages, I think it's useful for us to understand the nature of certain phenomena. Not everything that happens is exactly the same. There are different types of events. And there are many, many different types. I think there are two types that are important in debating. There are threshold events, and there are linear events. And when you talk about bad things that might happen, they either happen in the sense of happening as a threshold event, in other words, they happen all at once, or a linear event in that they happen a little bit at a time. Let's give you some examples of that. Let's start with the threshold event. Now, it either happens or it doesn't. It's an all or nothing thing. Here's an example. You either graduate from high school or you don't. There's no like, I graduated from high school a little bit, or I graduated from high school a lot. You either graduate from high school or you don't. Another example is being pregnant. You're either pregnant or you're not pregnant. There's no middle ground there. A threshold event is something that either happens or it doesn't. Now, in terms of a disadvantage, a threshold disadvantage says that a certain bad thing is not happening now, but it will happen if you adopt the affirmative plan. The second kind of phenomena that we want to talk about as it relates to disadvantages is a linear scenario or a linear phenomenon. A linear phenomena says that there's something bad, and the more it happens, the worse it is. So there's something bad, and the more it happens, the worse it is. For example, you could be low on funds. You could have only $100 to your name. That's all that you have. Well, could that get worse? Yeah, you could only have $75, or you could only have $50, or you could have $25. The more it happens, the more you lose money, the worse it is. Another good example is exposure to radiation. All of us are exposed to radiation all the time. But the more radiation you are exposed to, the more likely it is to affect your health. More radiation exposure is bad. So a disadvantage would say, for example, the affirmative exposes people to more radiation, and that's bad. It's not a threshold event. It's not like you either get radiation or you don't. It's not like being pregnant. The argument is the more radiation you're exposed to, the worse it is. So those are a couple of basic kinds of scenarios that a disadvantage should fit into. Now, those are different types of arguments. And so you want to make sure that you're aware of whether your argument is primarily talking about a threshold phenomenon or a linear phenomenon.
There are also several components to the disadvantage which you will have in either case, whether it be a threshold or a linear. And the first of those is, of course, the name. You have to have something that you're going to call the disadvantage in the course of the round. Oftentimes, it's named by the impact or it's named by the link argument, but the most important part of the name is to make it something that the judge and the other team can clearly handle and clearly understand. Something that also helps that process is providing a thesis for your disadvantage. After you give the name in the first negative constructive, you should read a brief statement and a story of how the argument works, and present it so that the judge can become familiarized with the argument in case they're not already. Now, once you actually get to the construction of the evidence and the argument, there are several components that you want to have to your disadvantage. The first is the link, and that's the reason why adopting their policy would cause the plan to occur. You need to specify why it is that their action uniquely causes this to occur. And that leads into a second major option, which is uniqueness, or major component of the disadvantage, which is uniqueness and the brink, which says that the event that you say is occurring, or that you say that they caused to occur that's bad, is not occurring now. And by stating that, you can then go on to show that when they do cause that to happen, by an internal link argument, which says that underlying that you need to reach the impact somehow. For example, you'll see in the federalism disadvantage that we'll use as the demonstration that the internal link is that the federal education policies are key to the balance of federal power. That way you can have some connection between the link argument, the uniqueness argument, and the impact argument, which is the final component of your dissent. The impact argument simply states why it is that what they're doing is bad and why it is that it's a reason to reject the affirmative. Usually you want to construct the impact in a way that keeps it bigger than any argument that the affirmative makes out of the 1AC, so that if you win the impact to your disadvantage, you win the round. Otherwise, the disadvantage doesn't serve you very much purpose. Mm-hmm.
So the basic story is, it starts with the link, mm-hmm. the affirmative plan. It ends with the impact. Something bad happens. And then the stuff in between is whatever you need for that to make sense, right?
Right.
So a disadvantage is sort of a logical chain. You adopt the plan causes this to happen, this causes something else to happen, and then eventually that leads to the impact, which is something bad.
Which is, yeah.
It's like a story.
Right.
In a lot of ways, it's like a science fiction story or a fantasy story. It says, if we adopted the affirmative plan, something bad would happen. And you need to make sure that your story is logically complete, it has links, it has internal links, and that your story is compelling. It has impacts.
Yeah. The example that we have of a disadvantage for today's discussion is the federalism disadvantage, which is being run a lot on this year's education topic in high school.
Mm-hmm. Could you just, what would the, so they're probably going to call it federalism,
mm-hmm.
and then the thesis of the argument would be?
The thesis would be that education is a state responsibility. Taking that power away from the states upsets the balance of power, and that's bad because other countries model our balance, or our federal balance of power, and that keeps them safe.
Mm-hmm.
The uniqueness in the brink evidence would, in our example, be a card or a piece of evidence that says education is interpreted by the states as a court responsibility right now. This would most likely explain that in recent cases, such as the Lopez case, that the courts have interpreted education to be primarily a state responsibility, which means that in the status quo, the federal government is not operating in the state's grounds on education. Now, the link card would say that federal education policies strip the states of their constitutional rights and upset the balance of federalism. This piece of evidence would most likely delineate very clearly how that story took place and how it was that by passing a federal education policy, you removed the state's rights to control education and you upset the delicate balance of federalism. Finally, after the delicate balance of federalism has been upset by the A and the B card, you would go to the C card in this case, which is the impact, that U.S. federalism is the model for world stability. Now, other countries often model the U.S. federal system in a way, in ways to deal between the federal government and the smaller municipal governments within the states or localities. And if that model breaks down, then we're likely to have scenarios like what happened in Bosnia, where the difference between state and separatist autonomous governments causes a clash. So that's the basic structure of your federalism, this ABC. It's
okay.
Quick,
what,
and it tells the story.
What, now, you would structure it as an outline, right? Mm-hmm. ABC. Why don't you read the outline slowly, and why don't you try to write it down so that you'll get an idea of what a disadvantage looks like. Now, its name is federalism, and the thesis of the argument is that giving state power over education to the federal government, which most plans would do, takes away from federal power, upsets that balance of power, and that's bad because other countries model our behavior and it hurts them and it hurts us.
And it does. Right.
So what would the subpoints be?
The A subpoint would be that education is interpreted by the courts as a state responsibility. The B subpoint would be that federal education policies strip the states of their constitutional rights and upset the balance of federalism. The C subpoint would be U.S. federalism is the model for world stability.
So here we see that
A serves the function of the uniqueness or the brink card. Tell us what the status quo is doing.
And B is?
B is the link and the internal link, which tells us why their plan causes the upset of the federal balance of power.
And C is?
C is the impact. C is the reason that you shouldn't do their case and the reason that the negative should win the round.
Okay. And generally, disadvantages are presented in the first negative constructive speech. They can be presented in the second negative, but usually it's to the negative's advantage to get the issue rolling right away at the start of the debate. Make your disadvantage arguments. Because what's going to happen is, at the end of the debate, the judge is going to weigh the advantages of the affirmative against the disadvantages offered by the negative. And if you're negative and your disadvantages are more important, then you'll win the debate. And if they're not, you will likely lose.
Right.
And you'll lose when you're affirmative if you're not able to answer the disadvantages correctly. So let's go to our next step then and talk about what happens when someone argues, when you are affirmative and someone argues against you, that your plan will lead to a disadvantage. We want to give you a number of ways in which you can answer a disadvantage. This is probably one of the most important lists that we'll give you at any time in this instruction period. We'd like to apologize for there being 10 things on this list. But these are possible ways or lines of argument that you can use to answer a disadvantage. And the more answers you have to the negative's disadvantage, the better off you are. So, these are things you should think about when you're affirmative and you're trying to answer a disadvantage. Ways in which you can answer. Way number one, you can argue no link. You can disprove that there is a link to your plan. You could say, no, what we're talking about is not a state responsibility. Or you could say, no, our plan doesn't do this bad thing that you're talking about. So that's your first option. You could argue no link.
The second option that you could use is to disprove the impact of their disadvantage. With the example of our federalism advantage, you could say that no, U.S. federalism is not the model for the rest of the world. Other countries don't look at it. That argument would disprove the impact of their claim. When disproving the impact on the disadvantage, you want to be as specific as you can to the 1A or to the 1NC's evidence and their impact scenario. However, if you do not have specific cards, more general negative or more general affirmative answers are also quite helpful in this instance because they disprove the weight that the disadvantage has.
And either way, either of these two answers can defeat the disadvantage. If the plan doesn't cause it, who cares? And if it's not a bad thing, who cares? The third option is that you can disprove the internal link. You can disprove the internal link. Every disadvantage is a chain of reasoning. It starts with the link, it ends with the impact, and there are several logical causal steps that take you from the link to the impact at the bottom. There are causal steps involved in my saying, You know, if your policy is you're going to drop out of high school, the link would be dropping out of high school makes you a less valued employee. It's hard to get a job. The impact would be that, you know, it's good to have a good job and it's bad to be unemployed. And the better job you have, the better. There may be internal links between that, which say things like, you need a good, you know, the new jobs that are opening up require an education. And these would be the internal links. Remember, a logical chain is only as strong as its weakest link. Find the weak internal link and argue against that. It's a good way to answer a disadvantage.
Another effective way to answer the disadvantage is by turning the link, by proving that in fact your plan prevents the problem that they say will happen or solves that problem. With the example of our federalism case, your link turn argument would be that federal education policies are important to keeping the federal balance of power, and that would disprove their argument because it would disagree with the link but agree with the impact and say that, no, we solved the bad thing that you present. One important thing to remember with the link turn is don't run it with what we will talk about next, which is the impact turn, because then you would just be constructing a new disadvantage for them.
This fourth idea of the link turn that Andy mentions is very important. It's a really good offensive weapon against the disadvantage. Instead of the negative saying, you caused this disadvantage, you don't just answer it, you grab it, you take possession of it, you say, no, we don't cause it, we solve the problem that you're talking about. So it becomes not just a way to defeat the disadvantage, but another reason to vote affirmative.
It also becomes a very effective tool when you're affirmative because you're likely to have more specific link turn evidence than they are link evidence to your case, because you run your case every round and hit these disadvantages with some frequency. So if you find those link turn pieces of evidence, or then you need to use them in as many rounds as you can because they're very specific.
Okay, the fifth way to answer a disadvantage is to use an impact turn. An impact turn. Now, a lot like the link turn, this attempts to take possession of the argument and use it for you. An impact turn is where you say, no, this thing that you say we cause is not bad, it's actually good. Whatever it is that the negative claims is bad, if you can prove that it's actually good, then it allows you to impact turn the disadvantage. For example, you could say that the federal balance between states and federal government is a bad governmental system. It's fine that we destroy this governmental system because, in fact, it's bad. Another example would be work. For the example I gave before of dropping out of school, well, you'll be able to get a job if you stay in school, and we all know we want a job. The impact turn that would be would say, no, we don't want a job. Jobs and employment are slavery, the boss is your part-time slave master, and that's a bad thing. Now, I know that may seem a little strange to you, or maybe not, depending on the kind of boss you had. But in any case, it gives the example of an impact turn. You say, no, we're not causing a bad thing, we're causing a good thing. The sixth argument that you can use is an argument called not intrinsic. Not intrinsic. And that's I-N-T-R-I-N-S-I-C. Not intrinsic. When something is intrinsic, it means that it's an inherent part of whatever it is you're talking about. Like sourness is an intrinsic part of the pickle. Pickles are sour. That's an intrinsic part of it. Now that we know what the word intrinsic means, what's the answer that says not intrinsic? That answer claims that other forces will intervene to stop the bad thing from taking place. Some other forces will intervene to stop that bad thing from taking place. For example, in our federalism example, we're saying that other countries model our federal system. And the intrinsic to this argument would be, no, they'll see that our new out-of-balance federal system is not working, and they'll decide not to adopt it. They won't model something that doesn't work, so there won't be this harmful model. So that's your sixth answer, non-intrinsic. The seventh answer is something that you can use every once in a while, especially if the negative team has run a counterplan. If you can point out that both the counterplan and the affirmative plan caused the disadvantage, that means it's irrelevant to the affirmative plan. If your plan causes the disadvantage of people not being able to get a job, and their counter plan causes the same disadvantage of people not being able to get a job, it's irrelevant for the debate. Nobody gets credit because they both did a bad thing. If your parents were trying to decide which of the children to give a higher allowance to, but both children had been bad recently, it wouldn't matter. No one would give an allowance because they've both been bad.
The eighth argument that you can use to answer the disadvantage is that there's no brain. This argument states that there's not enough of a link to push us over the impact. In this example, it would say that there are so many other federal policies that the states and the federal government have clashed with that doing one more education policy would not push us over the brink, and it would not make the impact actually occur. It would just be one more example of a federal policy.
So this would say, like, the federal system is so out of whack now, our plan doesn't make a difference?
Right. And that way the disadvantage doesn't happen, because it stops the internal link from ever happening as a result of the link that they claim. And if you can do that, then you can destruct that internal logical chain that Puna was talking about earlier. Now, the ninth answer that you can make, and this is one that's very important if you're making a link turn, is that they are not unique, and that what they are claiming will happen or should have happened anyway. Now, this argument can be used in several ways. First of all, in the education example, you could say that education is not interpreted as a state right now, which would mean that there is no impact to having the federal government act in an education sense again. That would mean that the disadvantage went away. A second way that you could do it is, or with this disadvantage, that's basically the way that you would argue uniqueness. Now, you could also argue, often within the rubric of uniqueness, but a slightly different argument, that it has been empirically denied because there has been several other federal policies with education recently that should have proven your disadvantage untrue. Now, one thing that you will want to remember with link terms and uniqueness is that if you were running a link term, you need to win the uniqueness for the link term as well. You need to be able to show that the link term that what you cause to happen that's good is actually going to save the system. Otherwise, it's just continuing to reinforce the system. If, for example, in the example of the federalism disadvantage, you said that education is not a state right now, but our education is a state right now, and then you said that education should be a federal right to preserve the federalism system. You need to win both of those arguments, otherwise your turn back to their disadvantage would make no logical sense.
The tenth and final answer that you can make is, and it's not the best answer, but sometimes it works, that the affirmative case advantage is bigger than the disadvantage, so it doesn't matter. So what if there's a disadvantage that takes place that says we're going to lose $500? If the advantage to the affirmative case is we're going to make $5,000, well, you'll still be $4,500 ahead. So you'd still want to vote affirmative. So don't be afraid to say against disadvantages with small little impacts. Who cares? So there's 10 ways the affirmative can answer. And I'm sorry that we're throwing so much stuff at you, but we feel that you've got the perception and the intellect to understand this stuff. Urban Debate League students can understand it. Novice debaters at the college level can understand it. Novice debaters at the high school level can understand it. Give yourself a break. You're a lot smarter than some people may have told you. You'll be surprising them. Let's talk about what to do with the disadvantage on the negative. Right? You are the negative. You present a disadvantage. The affirmative reads a bunch of answers. What are some things we should keep in mind?
The first thing you need to keep in mind is that you need, when on the negative, to answer all of the affirmative arguments. The presumption amongst most judges is that if you drop a single one of the affirmative arguments, then you lose the disadvantage. And that becomes especially important when you look back at the way that we talked about how the answers to the disadvantage each independently take out the disadvantage. So you need to make sure that in the negative block and in the second negative rebuttal that you go to every single one of their answers on the disadvantage. If you need to, ask them in cross-examination what some of their answers are so that you can make sure that you can answer them all. It may seem like a daunting task at first, but with the time you have and the negative block, it allows you to go to all of the answers. And you should. It makes your stance on the disadvantage much better.
Yeah, it's not like these presidential debates where they dodge each other's issues.
Yeah.
In a real debate, you have to answer your opponent's arguments, and you'll have to answer those answers. Second thing is, don't be afraid to explain to the judge why the plan sets all this in motion. Sometimes novice debaters have disadvantages that others have prepared, that they've given to them. You need to have a story about why it is the affirmative that sets this all in motion.
The third thing that you need to be wary of to win the disadvantage is that you need to make sure that you take care of all of the turns. Even if you are not making the best answers on the rest of some of the arguments, the only thing that happens to you in those cases are that you lose the disadvantage as an offensive weapon. However, if you fail to answer the turns and to defeat their arguments, which they say are turns, then you'll most likely lose the disadvantage and lose the debate round because they have now claimed that as an advantage that you are not answering.
Mm-hmm. When you're negative and you have a disadvantage, don't drop the turns. Number four, weigh the impacts. Make sure to explain to the judge, tell the judge the impact story about why your disadvantage is big, why it's significant, and weigh it against the affirmative case. Then when the debate's over, the judge will have reason to believe that the disadvantage is more important than the affirmative. Now, Andy, sometimes as a negative, you offer a disadvantage into the debate, and they have awesome answers. They have great answers, and you kind of wish it would go away. And in those instances, there's a word in debate, a phrase called kicking out. Sometimes you would like to kick out of those disadvantages and get them out of the debate. After all, if they have great answers, you don't want to continue arguing about it. You'd like to take advantage of the ones they don't have good answers in. What are some of the things that we should keep in mind when kicking out of a negative argument?
Well, you need to let everyone know that you're kicking out of a negative argument, and you need to do some work to actually kick out of it a lot of times. For example, if you believe that they have turns on the disadvantage, you're going to want to answer those and concede a no-link argument or agree that there's no link to the disadvantage. That's often a very good way to get out. If you can prove that there's no link, it usually makes all the turns go away and leaves you safe for the rest of the round.
Mm-hmm. And I think what Andy says is very important. You want to do it as a conscious action. Don't just ignore the disadvantage for the rest of the debate, because then the judge may think you just forgot about it. No, show the judge you're making a choice. You can say something like, "We have three disadvantages in this debate. Their answers to the first disadvantage are very good. Therefore, we're going to kick out of this disadvantage by conceding answers 2, 4, and 5. Now, please turn to disadvantage number 2, where their answers are not nearly as good, and this is where we're going to win the debate."
Right.
It shows the judge that you're able to know the difference between when you're winning arguments and when you're not. So sometimes it's good to kick out.
One last thing on kicking out of disadvantages, be careful not to use non-unique arguments to kick out, because often those are there in conjunction with link turns, as we talked about earlier, and by conceding the non-uniqueness argument, is all you're doing is conceding to them the uniqueness for their advantage, and that's a good way, that's a hard way to lose the round, but a painful way to lose the debate.
Okay, disadvantages are important. The negative's got to have them. The affirmative's got to answer them. Thanks a lot, Andy, for being with us again. Thank you for being with us again. We'll see you next time. Keep on debating. You should have had a practice debate by now. Keep on debating and don't give up.